Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host today, Shad Marquette, and I'm chatting with Brian London, publisher of the Gold Newsletter and purveyor over the New Orleans Investment Conference, which we were talking off mic, Brian, maybe one of the few in-person events this year, and it would be great to get everybody back together in New Orleans for a live event. Maybe real quick before we dive into the markets, just bring everybody up to speed on some of the speakers you have slated for this year and what your plan is for this year's event in New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm very pleased to say that we are not only in person this year, but still in person. You know, we've had to weather some uncertainty over this Delta variant and some new mandates in the city of New Orleans and the like, but we've just gotten clarification on all of that. And it looks like for the conference, for the conventions, there will be no vaccine mandates. And although we're going to have to switch a little, some of our social events around a little bit, we are full bore, pedal to the metal, aiming toward an in-person event October 19th to 22nd. And Shad, I tell you, I'm so happy about this because we have my dream team, my wish list of experts out there coming this year. You know, we start off with Ron Paul, then we've got James Grant, we've got Jim Rickards, Danielle DiMartino Booth, Jim Iurio, Doug Casey, Rick Rule, Dave Collum, Dominic Frisby, Tavi Koster, Lawrence Lepard, George Gammon, Brent Johnson, Peter Buchvar. It just goes on and on and on and on. They are the best thinkers, I believe, out there today. And to be able to listen to them and see them all in one place at one time and try and break free of this kind of virtual meeting, universe that we've been in, I think it's just an extraordinary opportunity to mingle with like-minded investors, very successful investors who are willing to share their ideas, the top speakers, the top thinkers with the best insights out there in this really critical time in the markets. And a lot of companies, dozens of the best junior mining companies are coming down with if their management teams, and you can talk to them face-to-face and figure out what the best opportunities. You know, every year from our exhibit hall, the many, if not most, of the best performers in the junior mining sector over the next year are there in that hall. And that's the place to find the really explosive multi-bagger investments.
Well, it does sound like the who's who of the mining space, but also just economic thought leaders. So it sounds like it should be a good conference, and wishing you guys well in that event. Speaking of events, we've got one tomorrow with the Jackson Hole event with the Federal Reserve and all ears and eyes tuned into what Jerome Powell may say. What do you make of this recent narrative about the tapering, and should they taper? When will they taper? How much will they taper? And how that's affecting or potentially affecting markets?
Well, tapering is coming. We knew that. We just didn't know when they were going to start talking about it. I had been thinking that they would not say anything at the Jackson Hole meeting because there's really no reason to, because, you know, they have the Fed meeting, the September meeting coming up on September 22nd, and that would be a great time to start talking about it. And waiting a month would allow Chairman Powell to get a better feel for the impact of Delta on the economy, inflation numbers, et cetera. But considering that there's been literally today no less than three Fed officials that come out and start talking about the need for tapering, it seems like there may be something in the news tomorrow about that and from Chairman Powell's speech. So we'll see. And if it is, it probably won't be bullish for gold, probably will be bearish. But before we had the news today of the bombings in Afghanistan, gold was down only about $8 after this parade of Fed officials had come out and talked about tapering. So I think a lot of that, before we got on, I was just texting with my friend Peter Buchvar, and we're thinking the same on this, that gold's performance before the bombing was actually pretty good, and that it has probably discounted already some degree of tapering and some announcement in regard to tapering. And as we've seen, though, that, you know, the Fed's first moves toward actual monetary tightening typically mark a bottom in the gold price. In December of 2015, it was the first rate hike that actually marked that bottom. This time, who knows? It may not be an exact repeat. It may just be a rhyme with that previous performance. So, and things move much more quickly these days than they did post-2008. So the announcement of some tapering plan may form the bottom for gold. I think, looking at the technicals, we still have a few weeks left of weakness or sideways action in gold. And I still am kind of circling that Fed meeting on September 22nd as maybe that a general area for a bottom in gold.
Yeah, it's a great point, just because a lot of people think tomorrow is really going to be more of Jerome Powell doing his acceptance speech for another term as a Fed chair, as opposed to anything substantive. So it could be a big nothing burger, but definitely we'll have to keep tabs on the September Fed meeting to see if we get a little bit more guidance on what they will be doing with this. As far as how it'll affect the gold price, one of the things that some of our generalist investors and some of our fund managers have brought up is most people have already priced this in, to your point, but if they do start dialing back the amount of their $120 billion of bond purchases each month, the question is, who's going to buy those bonds? And if nobody buys the bonds, wouldn't that drive rates up? And if the rates get driven up, couldn't that roil the markets a little bit? That could actually be a trigger to pile a little bit of safe haven flows into gold. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's a great argument. You know, the Fed has been the elephant in the room in the treasury markets, and therefore, how good are those signals, those yields? How good are the S signals right now? I think they've lost a lot of their accuracy and are really only valuable directionally. You know, speaking of Peter Buchvar, I think it was he who had a great analogy that, yes, they'll stop pumping. They won't be pumping as much air in the balloon. You know, they'll still be buying assets. They just won't be buying as much, so it would still be additive. But his analogy is that if you decrease the amount of air you're pumping into the balloon, the size of that balloon is going to decrease. And these markets are so dependent, so addicted to this monetary adrenaline from the Fed, that would imply some contraction in the overall markets. And we all know how dangerous that is given the levels we're at right now.
Yeah, and especially where there's also some other signals in the marketplace that the general economy may be slowing more than they want. And it's also fairly telling that tomorrow is going to be a virtual Fed meeting because they're also worried about the Delta variant. And if we get into a position where businesses are locking down again and we start getting supply chain interruptions again, it seems like an odd environment to pick now to start tapering back things if everything's supposed to be so rosy. But we'll keep tabs on it, and we'll keep tabs on the interest rates and the bond market. But as far as gold, the price action, it's actually held up pretty well. We all know that it had that double bottom in March around 1673 and 1675. And then 2 weeks ago, there was that overnight flash crash that went down and tested that same level for a third time. And a lot of bearish commentary came out that very next Monday that, hey, we're going lower, 1600s, 1500s. This could be the end of the bull market, and it may be a confirmed bear market. But gold has held up pretty well and clawed its way back up to the $1,800 level, got over that 1760 support, and a lot of people are looking at that the 1830 to maybe 1850 range. They'd like to see it get back above. But overall, as someone that's talking to a lot of the experts in the industry and talking to a lot of investors, what is your take on the current setup in gold, the sentiment in gold, and where things may be heading moving into the fall?
Yeah, again, you know, I think we've got a few more weeks left, but we have to get through this Fed shift in messaging. You know, the Fed has made its mind up that it has to get to tapering, and it seems like you make a great point that it's an odd time now to do that, given everything else that's going on, but it seems like they've made up their mind, so they're going to go ahead and do it. You know, it's kind of this groupthink decisions by committee, and it's hard for them to change their mind. So they're on this track toward tapering. I think we just have to get through that, and then we'll break out in gold. We'll see a breakout in gold and silver as the markets, as investors realize, the Fed really can't do much. It can taper quantitative easing, but interest rate hikes are going to be very difficult for it to accomplish. And it won't be able to go very far down that road before the debt service burdens will, you know, crater the federal budget, and or the equity markets will start to really deliver a harsh message to the FOMC to lay off. So they can't. They're in such a tough spot right now. They're painted into the proverbial corner, and there's not much that they can do. So first off, we have the Fed actually doing something or trying to do something, and that should release the selling pressure on gold, and that should start a new rally like we saw in December of 2015. But secondly, at some point, the Fed is going to have to halt whatever efforts it makes towards normalization or reverse them. And at that point, gold takes off like a banshee. So it's just these next few weeks, maybe a couple of months, that we have to get through the shift in sentiment and messaging. And then I think the way is clear for the metals.
Yeah, it's interesting. If they do have to reverse course once they start tapering, or if they start getting into that hiking cycle and then have to reverse course, that could also be a trigger, just a change in direction after they just changed direction. So that would be a kind of a face plant for the Fed, but it may drive some money into the safe havens. So let's get into the mining stocks. We're in an interesting environment where we did see when there was a little bit of glimmer of hope when gold got back above that 1760 level, got up near 1800. We saw the juniors finally get a little life. We saw silver start taking off. We even saw the silver miners start picking up. And generally, we see that cascading event where when there's a turn in the market, most of the generalist money flows into royalty companies and producers, and then it goes down the food chain over time. It gets into the mid-tiers, then the developers, and then the early-stage explorers. At this point, there's a lot of things on sale. What direction are you looking as far as getting positioned in the mining stocks? Or is there any subsector that you're liking better than another? Or is there any areas that you're liking better than another?
Well, I'm still primarily in the exploration companies that are making news, releasing results, because they can weather the broader market trends a bit better. Once I'm convinced that gold is actually going to mount a sustained rally, these last few bursts that we've gotten haven't quite convinced me yet. But once I get a good feeling for gold and silver going forward, then I'll move more into some of the optionality plays, the companies that have a lot of resources and maybe in development, or maybe even early stage producers. I don't delve much into the production companies, although I'm finding some opportunities here and there. I recently recommended in Gold Newsletter i80 Gold Corp. I really like what Ewan Downie is doing there and their projects and where they're drilling right now. So I think they've got good news coming up, and they're very aggressive, will be very aggressive on the exploration and the development and the acquisition front. So I like that one, and that's kind of one of our few forays into the producer area.
Yeah, and sometimes when a producer has that exploration upside as well, they can still get rather torqued to rising prices because they have the production. They don't have to raise money as often as just a pure greenfields explorer, but they can still make a meaningful discovery, as can the developers. One question I have on the explorers is they're not all created equal, as we know, and a lot of them are lifestyle companies or companies that really aren't going to make a discovery. The odds are stacked against explorers in general. It's a difficult business, but there's some quality names out there. And there's these companies that are growing their market cap, but they're not really growing their share price. So how do you look at it when you're trying to get positioned into an explorer, the balance between spending money on the drill bit and trying to grow the value that way, or the potential of raising money, drilling like crazy, but only building your market cap and not pushing the share price higher, which doesn't really help the retail investors? How do you balance all that out when you're evaluating these companies and when you're getting positioned?
Yeah, management teams that are good and have rewarded investors in the past are the ones that can keep a share structure in check, and can raise money at appropriate prices. So they're the ones you need to stick with. And everybody says that, it's not news to anyone, but management teams are key. Close behind it, if not equally important, of course, is the project and/or the idea that management team is pursuing. So you need to have a good feel for that. Structure is when you dig into the weeds, get down in the weeds and figure out who owns the stock, how much, and if the company can raise money. And that's where you get a situation where the market cap may grow, but the share price never does, is when that share structure gets blown out because they're spending too much and not raising money correctly to pursue a very expensive project, and or doing it in the wrong market environment too. Sometimes when the market's down, that management team has to, if they can't raise money at decent price levels, need to just slow down and wait for the market to come to them.
That's a very valid point there too, because sometimes it's a good project, it's a good team, the timing's just off, and they try to raise at the wrong time, or they get wrong-footed. So definitely a lot for investors to consider. Any other parting thoughts for us here as we look at the precious metals markets, as we get ready for the Fed speak, as we're having a little uplift here in the metals prices, but nothing too dramatic? Is there any other things that you have your eye on moving into the end of the week and really moving into next week?
Yeah, I have my eye, of course, on tomorrow with the Fed. I really do think that we've got an interesting time ahead of us over the next few months. But I think gold is going to emerge from it in really, really good shape, because there is nothing that the Fed can do. So it's a rough patch ahead. It may only last another 2 or 3 weeks. It may last another couple of months. But I think we're, by that next Fed meeting, I think that could turn out to be a good launching point for gold. And if it is, this is the time to buy. This is the time to go out there and find a lot of really good companies out there that are selling for half what they were a few months ago, and really a third or less than where they were last year at this time. And there are a lot of companies in that position that are much, much better. We know much more about them than we did last year at this time, and all the news has been good. So finding those companies is the way to go, in my opinion.
Well, great thoughts there, Brian. We appreciate you spending some time with us here at the KE Report. And yeah, it's a great time for investors to build their watch lists, do their due diligence, get their ducks in a row, so when it is the right time for them to act, they know which companies and teams they want to back. And hopefully for all of us, the sector has a bright spot in the second half of this year. And we'll put a link below to your site so everybody can check out the work that Brian does. And just appreciate you being here on the KE Report today.
Great. Thank you, Shad. Great talking with you.